What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Adam Kalal, and alongside me, as always, is Graham Socks and Sandals Waldrop, and we are Atlanta's Own, brought to you by the Belly Up Podcast Network.
Pretty good, Adam.
Yeah.
I think it was your first intro in 6 years.
Well, you struck out like twice. We had two strikes on you.
I needed a pinch hitter. Snit went to the bench, got Adam Duvall to come in and lace a gapper.
It was an easy one.
Into left center field.
It was an easy one. Yeah. So, how are you? I'll let you answer the question, I guess.
Well, I don't have socks and sandals on today.
It's true.
But last night, an embarrassing photo was taken of me wearing socks and sandals.
Not just sandals, like flip-flops.
In my defense, I had to go back out to my car. I didn't want to put on my shoes. I already had socks on. I just had to get something real quick and come back in, so I got sandals.
I feel like you're already at
I forgot to take them off.
Like, you've never really cared what, like, people think of your dress, correct?
Or what I look like.
It's like, imagine when you're, like, a 70-year-old man, knock on wood.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah. I mean, you're really going to let it rip at that point, right?
I think I'll just keep wearing the same stuff I've been wearing. I'll still have this old... I've been wearing these workout pants since, like, high school. I'll still have them. Still have all my Bob Dylan shirts. I'll just be the same, I think.
Okay, just same, you know... Vintage clothing. 50 years in the future. That's a good play. That's thrifty of you, Graham. That's good.
Yeah. I don't spend a lot of money on clothes.
Yeah.
I buy one pair of jeans every like 2 years, and I wear them into the ground until they rip.
And then reluctantly buy another one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to live life, Graham.
Yep. So there's a lot to talk about in today's show, Adam. So much has happened since our last episode. We got a lot of Braves things to talk about as Matt Olson in particular is starting to heat up and Chris Sale's pitching like it's circa 2018 again, which is amazing. The NFL released the schedule, so we know the Falcons' full schedule, and the Hawks somehow have secured the number one overall pick in this year's NBA draft, winning the lottery when they only had a 3% chance to do so.
Where do we start? It's a lot.
That is a lot. We'll start with the Braves.
Okay.
They're top of mind just because, you know, we had this big series with Chicago this week that went well overall, minus last night. We have an off day tonight. Braves, Adam, are still in second place in the NL East. They are at 26-14, 3 games behind first place Philadelphia, who sit at 31-13, 705 winning percentage to start the season. Still not concerned at all about that. We're still not playing our best baseball, and we're only 3 games back of those losers. Well, I shouldn't say losers. They're our daddies right now, not just because of the standings, but because of the last two postseasons. But we're only 3 games behind them, and they haven't played a single opponent over 500 since the opening series against the Braves. So their schedule's about to get a little tougher.
That's
soon.
Crazy.
They're going to play some games against the Dodgers coming up and the Yankees. So hopefully someone's got to give. They've just been spoon-fed a schedule like you spoon-feed. Well, you're not even spoon-feeding your daughter yet, but you will eventually.
Oh, she similar eats with a spoon.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
They have a spoon-fed schedule like you spoon-feed your daughter.
Well, not only has their schedule been ridiculously easy, like we have faced, you know, going back to that West Coast trip, the 1-5 trip where we faced the Dodgers and the Mariners. The Dodgers and Mariners are 1-2 in league pitching right now.
Yeah.
Followed by the Braves at 3. So, like, our pitching's been phenomenal.
That's what's held us together.
And the offense has run up against some tough pitching. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
So the fact that we're still hanging around, and like you said, Philly has got to start playing some real teams pretty soon. So things might change a little bit for them. But the other thing with this Braves roster, Graham, I got my paper out today.
I've been
crunching some numbers.
Wow.
What percentage of the opening day roster do you think that we've lost so far? Not for the season necessarily, but just no longer on the roster, on the active roster.
22%.
Pretty close, Graham. 24%.
24%.
So, this is what we've lost so far. Sean Murphy, obviously, he's been out since the second game. So, instead of potential all-star catcher, we have Chadwick Trump, who's been fine. The biggest news about him, Dave O'Brien wrote an article about how he accidentally took number 45.
Who's this, Trump or Murphy?
Trump,
yeah.
So it's been a very highly selling jersey because his last name's Trump.
That's hilarious.
45.
That's Trump, the president.
Yeah, 45th president. Yeah.
So that's pretty funny.
He like gets some people cheer him, and then he gets boos randomly, and it like took him a while to figure out what was going on. So that's kind of funny, though. Let's see here. First base, we're still good. Second base, Ozzie was out for a little while. He's been back. Arcia's there. Outfield all intact. Third base, Riley's been out a little bit recently.
Couple games, yeah.
He's still on the active roster. The bench has been decimated. Luis Guillorme, no longer with me. Forrest Wall, no longer with me. Very sad.
Very sad.
But the Zach Short kid, he stepped in for Austin Riley.
He's done well.
He's been, like, he won us a ball game, yeah. Basically.
Run producer.
He plays great defense, and he's gotten some hits. Like, you know, as my coworker here, Graham, likes to say, track record. So, you know, if you look at his track record hitting-wise, he's not going to keep hitting like this, most likely. But it's been nice to see, and, you know, nice little trade up. And I didn't even realize Forrest Wall wasn't on the roster anymore. That kind of makes me sad.
It's been weeks.
Yeah. Luke Williams has been on the roster. I'm sure it's a thing where they just want Forrest Wall to get actual playing time. Because as we know, if you're a bench player on the Atlanta Braves, you're not playing.
You're not playing. Although this year it's been a little different.
Yeah. That's true. With injuries and whatnot.
Injuries, yeah.
So Ozuna at DH, obviously he's still here. He's leading this offense. He's leading Major League Baseball and RBIs. Just been, I mean, he's over 40 RBIs, Graham.
Yeah, 41.
We're like 30 something games into the season.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Very impressive.
It's been fantastic. So, you know, starting rotation is intact, except, of course, for Spencer Strider. So Elder is one of the substitutes that we're at right now.
Lopez's side was hurting a little bit. He came out early in that first Chicago game.
That's no good.
Only 71 pitches. They said it was just precaution.
Okay.
But yep. And he should make his next start. But he's technically banged up right now.
Yeah. Still on the active roster. And then bullpen.
You said Strider already.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the bullpen, the only pieces missing so far are Matzik, who I don't know if he's hurt or if he just was sent down or he's not good anymore, never going to be good anymore.
Well, I think it's one of those things, too, with Matzik that he's got his fastball's velocity is diminished. And unfortunately, it's also couple that with just getting back into pitching regularly again over the course of the season. You know, you missed last year. So, and he didn't pitch that deep into the year before in 22. So it's going to be a minute before he gets himself right. And he may never get himself right again. But like I said, build the statue for Matzik for that 2021 NLCS Game 6. Hopefully he can come back and contribute. There have been some times, there have been some appearances where he's looked okay, but for the most part, he's like getting banged up pretty good. He's giving up home runs. I think he's only had 3 clean innings out of like 12 appearances, and you just can't do that and want to succeed in being a bullpen reliever in any era of Major League Baseball. But yeah, he's got like a 9 ERA and like a 1.90 whip. Yeah. That's just not working.
So him not being himself weakens it a little bit, but, you know, great depth, like we talked about before the season started. Ray Kerr took his spot, and he's fantastic.
I love the way he pitches.
Fireballer, lefty, right?
Yeah.
Correct, I mean. And, and then Pierce Johnson right now is out, but I think he should be back this weekend. But you got Jackson Stevens, who's like a solid guy. Like, he would have made this roster opening day if it weren't for the Jesse Chavez trade. Mm-hmm. He was all set to be our late guy. So, like, we still do have that depth that's kind of like keeping the bullpen going. But we saw the other night in New York where, you know, not having Pierce Johnson, where you've got, like, you know, there's different tiers of bullpen pitchers, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, Pierce Johnson, Jimenez, Minter, Iglesias, those are like closer potential dudes.
I don't know. I don't think Pierce Johnson's a closer potential. All he throws is a curveball.
I don't know why you have been sleeping on Pierce Johnson.
No, he's good.
He's elite.
I don't know about elite.
Look at the numbers. He's elite.
He just has that curveball.
I feel like he's one of these guys.
It's a great curveball.
You just look at him, see his long hair, and you're like, hippie can't play.
Profile on this dude. He's got a 3 ERA and a 1.25 whip. It's solid. It's not like legendary.
I bet there's like one bad outing, and, you know, take out the one bad outing. That's my guess on that. But he would have been closing the game.
Well, you know what? You're kind of right. There was just that one time in against the Mets early in the season where he gave up three runs. But ever since then, he's only given up one run. If you take out that game, what I'm trying to say is he's only given up one run in, like, 13 appearances.
Yeah, he's elite.
He's really good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, take that away from him. But I also wouldn't want him to be my closer. He's a one-dimensional pitcher. And as good as his curveball is, if you make one mistake with it, he doesn't have anything to fall back on. But his control is not there.
He's a guy who can step in and close.
He can. He does have one save this year. So.
Speaking of closing.
But all those guys, like you mentioned, are really good to great pitchers.
Right.
But I wouldn't trust your boy Minter as a closer. We saw that against the Mets.
He's certainly a guy
who... He almost
blew
the Cubs game the other night.
Well, that was my main point, is like if Pierce Johnson was around, he probably would have closed that game out instead of Minter. Because Minter is just, he's great in the seventh inning, but, you know, ninth inning, it's just a different situation. I don't know if he's just feels the pressure more. Or, I mean, he's a pressure pitcher, but it's just like, I guess it's just something about knowing that, like, this is the end of the game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's got no problem striking out three in a row in a World Series game in the seventh inning.
Right, but when it gets to the, when you have to shut the door, I mean, this is a horrible comparison, but I remember the first time I played organized tennis, and it was my first match, and I was beating the shit out of this kid. And then it was like, okay, I just got one more game, and I couldn't put this kid away. He won, like, two or three games off me. And then finally I did put him away, but I was like, I had a big cushion. But it was also like, Jesus, like the pressure starts to get to you in that situation. And you got to be, and that's not to say Minter doesn't have closer stuff. I think he does. But yeah, there's some mental hurdle he has to get over if he actually wants to close. And I was flabbergasted that Snit threw him again in that Cubs game, fresh off of blowing the game against New York on Sunday night. I guess he still wanted to give Iglesias some more time after he threw like 40 pitches over two appearances. But I was like, man, he almost blew that game. He got two runners on, got bailed out by a double play, and then got the final out. But his stuff did not look good in the ninth inning either that night.
I don't think I'd call a double play getting bailed out. He induced a double play.
He induced a double play, but he what I'm trying to say is he did not set himself up to succeed there. He allowed him two base runners.
You know, there's a guy who we argued about a bunch last year that I wish we had brought back this year?
Who's that?
Kirby Yates.
How's he doing?
Great. He's the closer for the Rangers.
I guess your boy Anthopoulos messed that one up.
He did. He's the closer for the Rangers. Seven saves, 104 ERA, 20 strikeouts to six walks.
I guess he finally got his stuff together because, man, I never really saw it with him last year. I know we argued, but I was like, he was out for so long. But I think now that he's probably gotten a full season, sort of like what Chris Sale is going through right now, a full regular or full off season of training, not having to rehab. I think that really plays such a factor. I mean, we've seen that, especially in the last like 3 or 4 years. Think about like Charlie Morton, the year after the World Series, he was pretty trash, you know, throughout the season. But then you get to last year, he was good because he finally had a full off season where he could, you know, go through his normal routine and not have to rehab. I mean, I just think that is a really underrated part about coming back from an injury. So I think the same thing's happening with your boy Kirby, because we knew the stuff was there from his track record. It was just not enough time for him to get it together here with the Braves, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of fun to play, as you like to do, revisionist history.
Was that even a little bit? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a hypothetical scenario, like if you had Kirby Yates, you know, that lengthens your bullpen this year, but it's also like Alex is probably thinking about what happened last year.
And our bullpen's still great, but I think there's room to, like, I mean, you know, bottom of the bullpen, you got Dylan Lee, who's very, very good. He probably should have closed out that game against the Mets on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. He only threw like eight pitches the inning before. I was like, just send him out again.
Keep him in. Aaron Bummer, I think, has overall been pretty good.
He's been solid.
Kind of shaky start. And then Chavez, I know he got roughed around, I think, last night maybe, but overall still good. But I think there's room to add, like, if you can get another, like, dominant arm. Like,
yeah. I got just the guy for you.
Jimenez level.
Yeah. I got just the guy for you, Adam. Flamethrower Mason Miller. 25-year-old from the Oakland A's, our favorite trade partner.
Mm.
He's got eight saves, a .98 ERA, 38 strikeouts, and a .65 whip. This dude is throwing gas and closing games down.
That sounds fine and dandy. I just don't trust any relievers coming from small market teams where there's not the pressure. Like,
throw them
into a playoff. Like, remember Jimenez when we first traded for him from Detroit, and he was terrible.
Yeah, now you like Jimenez. Now Jimenez is doing good.
But that took him like 6 months to be
good.
Who
was the other guy? Green? Remember we got
Shane Green?
Yeah. He was trash initially, and then he was fine the next year. Maybe.
Yeah.
But so, who knows, I mean, this guy hasn't been around long enough maybe to
have all that losing stink on him.
Yeah, this is only his second year. And he only pitched in six games last year, and he was a starter for six of those games last year. But this year, you know, only 14 innings, and he's got 38 strikeouts. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Let's throw him a prospect. You know?
Yeah. Although the A's really, surprisingly, are not totally out of it yet. They're 19-26, only 5.5 games out of first place, so...
Yeah, there's some weird teams that like higher up the standings than you would think they would be. I saw the Royals are
Kansas City
doing really well this year.
The Yankees surprisingly are in first place.
Yeah, that's strange.
Yeah, it's odd.
They've been like not good for so long. I like don't hate them anymore.
I still hate them. I got those World Series wounds will never heal for me. Especially going to two of those games where we lost in horrible fashion.
We're talking 25 years.
It doesn't matter. Time doesn't heal all wounds, Adam.
That's true. That's fair, Graham.
I think they're still, like, deep in my soul, my most hated team. Like, if we can somehow beat the Yankees in the World Series in our lifetime, it'll exorcise a lot of demons from my childhood.
You got to beat the Phillies in the DS.
Yep.
The Mets in the CS, and then the Yankees in the World Series.
Fine with me. That sounds great. Yeah, I mean, then the Cubs are having a good year, 25-19 so far, and we took two. Like, just think about it, too. Like, that West Coast road trip, like, the Mariners are in first place in the American League West, and then you have to, you know, immediately go play the Dodgers after that, who are having a monster season, and Shohei is just hitting the shit out of the ball. He's hitting, like, 370, 15 bombs. Like,
disgusting.
It's a scary thing, thinking about a potential October matchup with those guys. But to circle back to your point, 24% of the opening day roster is not on the team anymore, or isn't active right now, and we're still 12 games over 500. That's still really impressive. And then once these guys get going, you know, your Olsons, your Rileys, your Acuñas, will be just fine.
Yeah, it was interesting that Snit, did you see Snit benched Acuña
yesterday,
and he said it was just a gut feeling type of thing. He just like in the dugout looking down the bench, and he could just sense his vibes were off, and he needed a day off coupled with today's off day as well,
right,
to hopefully get him right for what's our next series?
We're playing Freddie. We're playing San Diego this weekend.
Oh, okay.
4-game series that goes from Friday to Monday. Very, very weird.
Huh.
But to go back to your point about Acuña, yeah, that was an interesting point Snit made, and I think, you know, there's definitely verity to that because he got picked off 3 times, like in a
row. How ridiculous was that?
The last one especially was awful, and I think it was the first Cubs game this week where he didn't slide getting back into first base, and I was like, what the hell are you doing? It doesn't feel like Acuña's as, like, you can look at the stats and say, okay, he's not having a very good season, particularly from a power standpoint. Still getting on base at a decent clip, but it's not his normal number, but the power, like we've been talking about, is definitely down. But there's something, and I don't know what it is going on with Acuña, but he doesn't seem as locked in. He's swinging at pitches he wasn't swinging at last year. He's expanding the zone when he doesn't need to. And there's an interesting video I watched online, and I can't remember who posted it, and so apologies to whoever did, because it was a really good breakdown of just, it was a profile view of Acuña this year and Acuña last year, and sort of how he was swinging. And it seems like this year, and you can only really tell this from the profile standpoint or profile perspective, is that he has like an extra hitch in his swing where he's bringing his hands down a little bit and then swinging, whereas last year he was just swinging straight through the ball and there wasn't that extra hitch. And the exit velocity is down this year compared to last year as well. So I'm not saying that's the only reason, but it was a really interesting video to watch. It's like something he's... It might be like a subconscious thing that he's adding an extra hitch to his swing. I don't know.
Well, surely like Kevin Seitzer sees that.
I'm sure, but I'm just saying like to see the difference in the swings was wild from last year to this year, because that adds when you add something to your swing like that. I mean, you only have half a second to decide whether or not going to swing at a ball that's coming from the mound, coming from the pitcher. And so if you're adding something extra to your swing, that inhibits your ability to do what you were doing last year.
Sure.
Maybe. Especially if you're as good as Acuña.
That's fair. I feel like every year he has like one of these moments where like it's perceived as him being like lazy or just like not paying attention, being a dumbass in the moment, and couple that with getting benched, sometimes that propels him, you know?
Yeah, hopefully that'll light a fire under his ass. I mean,
I said bench him again Friday, and then...
No, you roll him out Friday, because like, if he comes out and hits a leadoff home run on Friday, then the message was received loud and clear. And Snicker, they asked him about that. I was like, what do you think is going on with Acuna after the game where he got picked off without sliding? And he was just, you know, you could tell, like, he gave, like, a very coach-speak answer, but you could tell, like, it was pissing him off.
Oh, he must have been livid.
Yeah, I was surprised he didn't bench he didn't bench him right when it happened.
I mean, that's got to be a record, right? For someone to get picked off three times in two games?
It's wild. I mean, Ozzy also got picked off by the same pitcher in that game, in the Cubs game, but... So clearly the guy had a great pickoff move, but the fact that that happened three times in a row is insane. And you're also costing yourself... I mean, think about the Mets game. That happened twice. You're costing yourself runs, potentially. I mean, we were up only 3-2. Maybe Ronald scores on one of those times and gets on base where he got picked off, or maybe both times, and then Minter giving up that home run to Nimmo on Sunday night isn't that big of a deal, because we still would have won. So, I mean, little things like that can decide baseball games.
Game. Yeah.
So that's frustrating, and hopefully Ronald gets his shit together this weekend. And I'm looking forward to it, because I'm going to the game tomorrow, or when you guys hear this, game tonight. So I'm going to get there early, make sure I'm in my seat by the time Ronald steps to the plate and really evaluate where his head's
at. That's why you want him to not be benched tomorrow.
Well, that's one
selfish
reason.
Selfish reasoning. Well, okay, I see, Greg.
But I mean, with a player of his caliber, right, what is benching him a second game going to do at this point? Like, I think you made him pissed off. Well, I think he's pissed off now.
I don't think he's pissed off from this one. This is just you need another day off. Now it's a message if you do it again.
If you do it again, yeah, but then I don't think you want to do that. I mean, the guys earned the benefit of the doubt, despite like any times where he hasn't hustled. If you combine the times he hasn't hustled, if you compare the times he hasn't hustled to the times he has outweighs the times he hasn't by a million.
Sure.
Like,
that's fair.
This guy 99.9% of the time gives maximum effort. He's had a couple of times that are magnified because of the profile, the caliber of player that he is, where it really stands out, where he doesn't hustle or it does something in a lackadaisical fashion. But I mean, the guy stole 70 bases last year. If you think like he's a lazy piece of crap, then you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, okay, I mean, you know better than anyone else that, you know, the social media age, what we do is we focus on the negative.
Of course. I'd focus on the negative all the time. Yeah. I'm a cynic. I'm a cynic by heart.
Right. But you just made so much sense there, though. I forgot your history as well.
Well, it's just one of those things. I mean, once again, always comes back to track record.
Sure. Sure.
We know the guy.
You're consistent there.
Yeah. I'm a track record person. I'm going to judge you based off what you've done.
I still don't understand how that works for rookies. Like, you just think every rookie's a piece of shit?
No, I don't think every rookie's a piece of shit. That's a good question. It's kind of like Terry Fontenot's best player available philosophy. It's like, well, you know, just because the quarterback might be the best player available, are you going to take another quarterback? And Terry Fontenot said, yes. Yes, I am. For me, with rookies, I am a wait-and-see kind of guy with rookies. I'm like, they don't have a track record. Like, they have scouting reports. You can read stuff. You can watch stuff. But it's like, you don't know. I give them like a year or two before I start getting on their ass.
That's the right answer, Graham.
Yeah. Let's talk about Matt Olson, though, Adam. 6 for his last 13, hitting .461. He's raised his average from .195 to about .219 since Saturday. And he had a really big game, the second Cubs game, where he won, I think it was 7-0, where he hit a double to right center field and then hit a big home run to right center field. And you might be wondering, like, who gives a shit if he's hitting the ball to right center field? And I counter that with, that says to me that he's not trying to pull the ball as much. He's waiting. He's sort of delaying his swing a little bit and driving it. He's not pulling it. He's just hitting it where it's pitched. He's not hitting dead center. He's hitting it to right center. He's still, like, got the power going.
Isn't right center pulling it for him?
It's pulling it a little bit, but it's not, like, to dead right field.
Okay.
Like, to me, it's still, like, he's hitting it to the gap. He's not trying to crush it. Like, his swing looks smoother. And I was noticing this particularly in that game. Like, he was waiting for the ball to come in a little bit more. Like, he's been early on a lot of pitches this year to me. Regardless of what the pitch is, fastball, off speed, doesn't matter. But in this game in particular, he was waiting for that pitch to get a little deeper in the zone, and then he was hitting it, and so he wasn't pulling it. He was hitting a nice, powerful stride to right center field.
I got to say, your impression of Matt Olson looks very similar to your impression of Ronald Acuña.
Yeah, it does. Like, it's really hard, like, powerful stride with the helmet talking about. Like, it was just a nice, powerful stroke to right center field is what I'm talking about. Both times, beautiful hits. I think he's coming back, and it's at the perfect time.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously crucial to this lineup. If you can have him, I think Ozuna's got 41 RBIs because he's been cleaning up a lot of the RBIs that Matt Olson would normally get since he hits behind Olson. But yeah, if he's coming back, Riley looked like he was on the verge of breaking out before he got injured as well. So yeah, I mean, those, if you got three of those guys going in the middle of the lineup, we're golden, man. Like,
yeah,
Like you said, Acuna's getting on base, but he's still just, he's not Ronald Acuna yet. Although he did have that massive home run in New York that he hit, what, like 440?
Oh, 450? Acuna? Yeah. No, like, you know, the power's still there.
Just something like ridiculous.
Something mentally going on with him and maybe mechanically. But yeah, it's huge to see Olson doing what he's doing right now. And the other guy that's just been unbelievable pitching-wise, I mean, Max Fried has, but let's talk about Chris Sale for a second. Last six games, 48 strikeouts and 38 innings pitched, six walks. That's a 48-6 K to walk ratio.
Wow.
Unreal.
You love that.
I love that. His whip is a microscopic 0.89. He's already worth 1.5 WAR this year. What was his WAR last year, Adam? Can you tell me?
I'm going to guess 0.7.
1.7, so he's only 0.2 behind the entirety of last season. He's been outstanding. That start against the Cubs was just unreal. He hit a couple of guys with his slider, but other than that, he was just dominating. I think he struck out nine, and every time he got he wasn't falling behind the count. Every time he got to the point where he was trying to put a guy away, where it was 1-2 or 0-2, you know, if he threw the fastball, guys were behind it. If he threw an off-speed pitch, guys were in front of it, and, you know, grinding out to third base or shortstop. I just could not get over just the mastery that he displayed in that start. Like, he was just in total control, pitching like an ace, like a Cy Young candidate. I mean, it was outstanding. I did not think we were getting this version of Chris Sale. I thought we were going to get a serviceable version of Chris Sale, but so far, particularly the last six starts, it's just been unreal. He's going deep into games. He's going like seven innings for the most part, and he's striking out guys. Yeah. And he's just not giving up any runs. Like I said, you know, the .89 whip is amazing, but he's also like a 2.5 ERA now. Like, all across the board, there's nothing you can look at with Chris Sale right now and say, that's not working. It's working like gangbusters.
Yeah. I mean, he's the entire package right now. The velocity's there. The stuff is there. Control is there. He's deceptive as hell with those arm angles. That's what makes him so hard to hit. He's a bulldog. He's a great teammate.
Yeah.
He's got the track record. He's been there, done that multiple times.
I mean,
World Series champion.
So filthy.
Closes out World Series.
Oh yeah, that's right. That Red Sox. He was the closer.
Yeah.
That 2018.
He wants
World Series.
The ball.
Yeah.
Everything is there, and he's healthy. He's gone through a full off season, like you were just talking about with Charlie Morton. To say, like, and the Red Sox were in town last week, and like
to see
Vaughn Grissom compared to who's already been dropped from my fantasy baseball team, Graham.
I saw you had him for a second. I was like, man, you must be desperate.
Yeah, and then you dropped Arcia, so I was like, well, we'll do a swap out of those two guys.
Arcia is just awful offensively right now.
Grissom's hitting like 138. So yeah, I mean, I guess Grissom gets a little, if we're going with your rookie theory. He's still kind of a rookie.
He's kind of a rookie.
But, you know, we need an ace. So, yeah, we won that trade. It's looking like.
Yeah. No, Sale's just been more than advertised. Like, I was just saying, I just can't get over how good he's been. Now, we'll see how that holds up over the entire year. But right now,
that's our concern, dude. And that's obviously the Braves' concern with all of these guys. Like, none of them are anywhere close to, like, the innings leaders in Major League Baseball.
Because
they're skipping turns any chance they can.
Right.
They're taking it easy with them. Did we talk about the Max Fried?
Yeah, I was about to just...
Okay.
I wanted to get into that.
Okay. I would say Sale's been our ace, but, you know, Max Fried, the last few starts has just been unbelievable. He's had no hitters through 6 and 7 the last two starts, yep. I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, social media, so I guess that was Friday night or Saturday night where he had a no-hitter through
Saturday
7.
Saturday night, yeah.
No-hitter through 7 innings. He had thrown like 109 pitches, yeah, at this point. And to me, I'm completely okay with Snit's decision to pull him out.
I am too. If he had a perfect game going, I would say leave him in, just because you don't know if you ever get another chance at that. Because he had 3 walks at that point. Or he had 3 walks by the end of the 7th inning. But if I'm fine with it, because, like, if you think about it, if he goes the full gamut and throws a complete game, no hitter, he's going to throw 130, 135, hell, maybe even 140 pitches. We don't need that on May 11th.
And that does nothing for us. The goal of this team is to win a World Series.
Yes.
And does Max Fried throwing a no hitter accomplish that?
No.
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 Could it potentially damage that goal? Yes. Like, Mike Fultonewicz. What was that, 2018, 2019?
That was Newcomb.
I think they both did it, didn't they?
I don't think... Well, no one's thrown a no-hitter since Kent Merker.
Well, yeah, I know that. But I thought, like, Fulte had one in the 9th in Oakland.
I think he did. And then,
that was Fulte the year before.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah. And he threw, like, 145 pitches or something.
Yeah.
And he was just a bum the rest of
right,
his career.
Right.
Not saying that would happen to Max Fried, but at the end of the day, like, that would have been cool in the moment, but we wouldn't have cared about it by now. It's a no-hitter. Like,
yeah,
there's been over 300 of them at this point.
Right. But okay, here's a question for you. If it was a perfect game, you let him go? Just because that's so rare. That's like once in a lifetime.
I don't care.
Like, I would let him go if it was, just because that is such a big deal.
I think it's up to him. If he's okay, battling,
yeah,
for it.
Yeah.
And, like, because he was not, like, his demeanor in the dugout was, like, okay. He wasn't, like, arguing with Snit to, like, stay in the game.
No.
But, like,
I did love the cut to him when Iglesias gave up the home run to blow the collective no-hitter, though. He just looked like, I want to die.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would have been nice to get. But I still say, like, a week later, you forget about it.
Yeah.
Like, who threw the last no-hitter?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. But perfect game, there's only been, like, what, 15, 20, something like that.
Yeah. And to all you, like, old, quote-unquote, old-school people who are like, hey, what are we doing? What's baseball? You can't let the guy finish a no-hitter. Who cares? Like, move on. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, this is the right decision. Like,
oh, yeah. I think Snicker was totally in the right. I mean, 109 pitches, you're good. Like, come on.
Like, we just know more than we did about, like, what type of injuries we could see from that. And, like, this team cannot afford another injured ace pitcher.
This is also a guy, right, that missed, like, 2 months of the season last year with a forearm strain. You not need to be testing that right now.
We arguably have not won the World Series the last 2 years because of starting pitchers not being healthy come playoff time.
Right.
So that's
what we care about. Well, and the offense sucking ass, but yeah, both are huge problems.
Yeah.
Both are how you win the playoffs, and, you know, you can't control injuries, but you can do your best to prevent them by doing exactly what Snicker did on Saturday night.
Cheers, Graham.
Yeah, no, well, I totally agree with you on
we're
that.
We're on the same page.
Anything else you want to talk about with the Braves?
No, I think we're good on the Braves, Graham. That, cool. That about covers that. Let's move on to some Falcons or Hawks, man. Your call. Arguably, the Hawks are the bigger news.
Yeah, right? Let's talk about the Hawks. Let's take a quick break first, hear a word from our sponsor, and then we'll talk about the Hawks securing the number one overall pick in the 2024 NBA draft.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan from No Credentials Required to talk to you about one of our newest partners at Belly Up Sports, SeatGeek. Yeah, live sports is great on television, but the feeling of being at the arena is a priceless experience. That's why our friends at SeatGeek are there to help you find the best tickets at the best prices. Not only can you get tickets to sporting events, we can also get tickets to concerts, comedy shows, musicals, and more. Search for your desired event now at SeatGeek.com, enter promo code BellyUpSports at checkout, and you save $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets.
All right, Adam, we're back. So yeah, Hawks have the number one draft pick. They got about 6 weeks or so to make their decision. They are scouting heavily internationally right now. But of course, let's just get this out of the way. A lot of prognosticators have said this is the worst draft class in maybe 25 years. So of course the Hawks, in true to Atlanta fashion, have to get the number one pick during this class. That's not to say that just because people say that means that all these guys suck, because that's not the case.
No, and that is annoying that there's not like a surefire
Zion, LeBron,
franchise changer. But like, I mean, if you look at like the last like 10 years of number one overall picks, the hit percentage is like 50-60%.
Oh yeah, I mean, you think
it's not a sure thing, but like also, it's a good thing that we have the number one pick. Like, don't harp on the fact that the draft, there isn't a Zion, there isn't that guy. Like, you don't know what you're going to get, and it's better to have the number one overall pick in a bad draft class than the number 11, 12, whatever we were supposed to have.
Right. And so, it's interesting, too. Like, some of the best players in the league right now, like Giannis wasn't drafted until the 15th overall pick. Joker man, Nikola Jokic, who's just the best player in the world probably right now, was a second-round pick. Jalen Brunson was a second-round pick. You never know where the superstars are going to come from. Hell, I'll even go back. This is a terrible comparison, but Gilbert Arenas, you know, who had a good 5-6 year run before he kind of went off the deep end a little bit, he was undrafted. He was one of the best players in the league. So what I'm trying to say is that you can find value in other parts of the draft, but the Hawks, unfortunately, have to find someone that can help change the trajectory of the franchise right now with the number one overall pick. And the list of candidates are interesting. But before we get into that, Adam, would you want to potentially trade this pick to somebody? Package this with DeJounte or Trey and really try to rebuild everything? Or would you just say, let's go draft the best player that we think?
I just want to take it at this point.
I think I agree.
You can take it. You could still trade. I'm more on team trade DeJounte at this point.
That's interesting. You changed your tune.
I did. I don't know. Trey is really good. And I saw videos, highlights of him in New York in the playoffs. And like,
we know Trey is a
bowing to Madison Square Garden.
Trey is a primetime performer in the playoffs.
So like, if we could trade DeJounte and get a pick back or two, and then you've got Trey, Jalen Johnson, number one overall pick.
And hopefully you got
Kongwu.
Yeah, hopefully you got somebody in that trade with DeJounte that can come in and help.
And yeah, whatever you get out of that. Like, things just got a lot more interesting for the Hawks.
Yes.
Like, it's a game changer. Like, we didn't like fully get into how ridiculous that is that we got the number. I mean,
like
you said, 3%, but like, it was just so off my radar. Like, things like this do not happen to us at all.
No.
Like, you broke the news to me in a text message as I was finishing up a round of disc golf. And it's just.
Yeah, Alexa just saw it on Instagram. I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah.
She was just like, Hawks got the number one pick. I was like, and I was eating, I was eating some chips, and then my mouth was just like hung open for a solid 20 seconds. I was like,
yeah, I mean,
it's crazy.
I feel like NBA draft is that one where like that happens more often than, well, I guess it's the only lottery, but it seems like the worst team never actually gets that first overall, which is like, I mean, that's the goal. They don't want to encourage tanking and
right.
all of that. So, let's talk about our options, but like, it's just really, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And like, this is the time. I don't even remember what's our GM's name.
Landry Fields. Yeah.
Like, dude, don't screw us on this. Like, for the love of God, you've done nothing at this point to give us any confidence in your abilities as a GM.
He has a bad track record.
But, like, you have all the time in the world to decide who you're going to take. Like, you decide the fate of the draft.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter what people do. There's no one ahead of you. Just talk to everybody. Call everyone you know. Get their opinion and, like, make that decision. Like, in a few weeks.
Sure. I saw a picture of him and Korver were scouting a couple of international players at the combine. Like, they're on it. He said something interesting in an interview with the Midday Show on 92.9 The Game this week when he was interviewed. And they pretty much asked him, like, hey, why aren't we spending? You know, I'm like paraphrasing. And it's like, what do we need to do to get Tony Ressler to spend more on the team? And he just goes, oh, don't blame ownership for that. That's like my decision. And so it's like, it was really interesting. I don't know if it was just him falling on the sword, which I assume is what he was doing. But I was like, okay, bro, you said it. I'm going to hold you accountable then that you're the reason that we're not spending. And then you're the reason that we shipped off John Collins for nothing, shipped off Kevin Herter for nothing.
Did he say why he isn't spending?
No, it was just sort of left at that. Like even Randy Mack even was kind of like taken aback by it. He made like a little like, oh, like sort of noise. Like it was just like, oh, I was not expecting that. And they sort of moved on to other questioning. But he said it with a lot of conviction. And like I said, I don't know if it's a thing where he's falling the sword for wrestler or if he actually believes that, but because he said it, I'm holding him accountable.
I mean, if you say it, at least say like, I'm not spending cause you know, the guy hasn't been out there. We don't want to
There was no rationale behind it. He just said like, I am the person that decides what we spend pretty much. And I was like, okay.
Well, maybe he spends this off season.
Maybe then. So. But like that's the guy I'm going to blame if we don't. So let's talk about the guy that everyone wigged out about the second that we got this number one pick. That everyone said, we should take this dude. This is going to be like our Wimbenyana. This is a French prospect named Alex Sarr. The dude is 6'11", 0.75 without shoes. I think he's 7'1 with shoes. Weighs 224 pounds. Wingspan of 7.5 feet. A standing reach of a little over 9 feet. So clearly a physical specimen, even though he's pretty thin. But averaged 9.5 points, 4 rebounds per game, while only playing 17.3 minutes per night through 27 games in the NBL in Australia. So what's really weird about this, and I remember this was kind of like the thing with like Luka Doncic. Like, Luka didn't play, like, a lot of minutes, but everybody was all over him saying this is, like, the next big stud, even though his stats weren't, like, eye-popping wherever he played basketball. And I'm getting kind of, not to say this guy will beat Luka, but it's sort of, it's hard to evaluate these international prospects when a lot of them don't play heavy minutes, you know, in their respective leagues.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding is, you know, it's pro basketball that he's been playing, right?
And right.
On a veteran team, so he has been just not given that opportunity.
Yeah, he's only like 19.
Yeah, to be the number one guy. So, like, this is also one of those things where Sarr is like, he might not come in and average 20 points a game. He might be like a 10-point a game guy.
Right.
And, like, you got to give him the Graham treatment, even though he is a number one overall, like, that might start at 10. And then as he gets stronger and, you know, develops more offensive skills than it sounds like he currently has. I don't know, man.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm not going to pretend to know it.
No,
about him.
You can watch videos and stuff, and he looks good. Like, here's the thing. Here's the thing that really stands out about him, and something we desperately need is interior defense. 1.5 blocks per game, and 0.5 steal per game, and only 17 minutes played per game. So that just shows that, you know, you give him some real minutes, he could get 2, 3, 4 blocks a game.
Is he a 5 or a 4, though?
He's a 5, for sure.
Yeah.
And he's only shooting about 27% from three-point range. But when you watch the tape on him, his lateral movement's good in terms of, like, closing out on defense. And he's an animal when he's blocking shots. Like, he's very aggressive when it comes to that. Like, you can see the athleticism is there, but he might be a little raw on the offensive side of the ball. That's not to say he's, like, trash offensively, but it's definitely, like, his calling card right now at this stage in his career is defense.
That doesn't sound super exciting for number one overall.
No, but it's like, also, this is just me.
Oh, yeah, you don't know shit.
I don't know shit. all I'm doing is reading stuff and watching videos. Like, I don't know. Like, who the hell knows? But that's the guy that everyone says we should take. There's another player, also another Frenchman, who I will try to pronounce his name, but it's going to be rough, so bear with me. Zachary Rechacher. Was a small forward, only 18 years old, 6'8". But he has been playing in the French league, averaging 10 points a game, 3 rebounds. Hooray. I don't really know. You know, it's just like, we don't know what the hell is going on. If you look at, like, the people that are, you know, actually, you know, some folks you might know, like the third overall rated prospect on ESPN right now is Donovan Klingon. He's that big monster on UConn, that 7'2 guy that everybody really likes. I like him too. I think he's a really great player. I don't know how he translates his game to the NBA. I think maybe he can play in the NBA. I don't know. Like, the point is, like, we can go up and down this list, and, like, I have watched a decent amount of UConn. I think he can play, but do I think he's better than Sarr? Do I think he's better than Rishasher? Rishasher? I have no idea. I have no idea.
Just take Sarr. Like, Brad Rowland says to take him. All the experts say to take him. Don't overthink it. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. I think also it's just thinking about need, right? I mean, like, we need, like, Klingon would be, I think, would be a good fit, but is he, like, a transformative player? I don't think so. I think he's pretty one-dimensional. He doesn't have a three-point game at all. He can rebound, he can defend, but it sounds like Sarr could be the complete package, and he also has the ability to add more bulk to his body, to his frame, and he's younger, and he can be developed.
Yeah.
Not to say Klingon can't be, but so that's the exciting kind of Hawks news, so do your own research on these guys. I have no idea who any of these people are, except for Klingon. So, but it's interesting, like, the top 10 prospects, it's like, it's mostly international people. Like, you got Stephon Castle from UConn, Klingon, Rob Dillingham from Kentucky, Reed Shepard from Kentucky, you know, all good players. But it's like, it's crazy how, and you know, one of the reasons I do want to take Sarr also is just, like, I feel like international players are developed a hell of a lot better than American players these days. You look at just the fundamentals of a lot of the European players that are the premier players in the league right now, and Doncic, Jokic, they're monsters. They're animals. Not to say, like, you know, guys like Anthony Edwards, who's showing out in this year's playoffs, you know, folks like that aren't, but I really like that the way that these international players are developed, and they just seem more sound fundamentally coming in the league than the majority of American players over the last probably 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
They've been playing against grown men as well.
Right.
I mean, that's a big difference.
Right.
They're not going to college first. Although some American players are going to play internationally as well. So
yeah,
maybe that's the play now. Yeah, it's kind of flip-flop from what it used to be. It used to be you see all these lumbering white international guys, and it's like, I don't want anything to do with that guy. Give me the best athlete. But athleticism doesn't, like, fully translate.
You don't think Jokic is athletic?
I don't think he's the greatest athlete in the world.
Probably not, but
of course, everyone in the NBA
dropping 40 points the other night.
Yeah, but a lot
11 assists.
His touch around the rim is just unbelievable. That's not athleticism necessarily. It's touch. It's something different.
But he can play, like, both sides. Like, he's
Skyhawk can freaking dunk.
Doesn't mean he's a good defender, Bob. Yeah. But Jokic is just a great defender.
You can find athletes all over Atlanta. They can't play in the NBA, you
sure.
know. It's something to fundamentals, like you're saying, as well. You got to have both.
Right. Well, I think that covers this Hawks segment. Get excited about the number one pick. Hopefully Landry Fields, Kyle Korver, and that brain trust who hasn't made a good decision makes a good one in late June with the draft. We'll take another break and talk about the NFL schedule release. Adam, exciting times. The schedule's been released for the NFL this year. I came up here before we started recording. I was like, Adam, the schedule's released. We're going to talk about that a lot. And then Adam goes, I don't give a shit about the schedule, Bo.
I mean, it's
like you to explain yourself.
It's kind of true. I think it's exciting for, like, 2 seconds to hear, you know, the beginning of our schedule where Arthur Smith's coming back to Mercedes-Benz. Yes. First game. We have, what, like 3 or 4 primetime games?
It was 4 primetime games. We had none last year.
That's cool. But beyond that, it's like, okay, we're playing teams that are in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah. Big surprise. Like, who
but
cares?
Think about
It's the NFL just trying to build excitement.
Yes, and I think they're succeeding because I'm analyzing this schedule, and I'm wigging out over these first 5 games. Right, I think it's a gauntlet.
Give me the schedule. I haven't actually looked at
it. Okay, let's talk about the first 5 games first, because I think that's going to define the season to me. You open with Pittsburgh. Arthur Smith coming in with also coming back is Cordarrelle Patterson and Michael Pruitt. You know, they're going to be angry as well.
Oh, they got Pruitt?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's brutal. We're probably going to get a Cordarrelle Patterson pass to Michael Pruitt. Some bullshit.
I think they
that Arthur Smith
Parker
will come
Hesse
up with
as well.
Yeah, maybe Parker Hesse will. No, Parker Hesse to Patterson, lateral to Pruitt for a touchdown.
Brutal.
So you got Pittsburgh, who honestly, like, your first three games are against playoff teams from last year. Pittsburgh was in the playoffs. They have a beastly defensive line that includes T.J. Watt, who Thomas Dimitroff should have drafted. That moron. that's going to be a tough game. And then Russell Wilson's the quarterback. So that's no cakewalk.
Sure.
Then you go up to Philly, a place we haven't won in since 2012, and you play the Eagles on Monday Night Football. You know, they revamped their secondary. You know, they're kind of coming off a disappointing season where they just collapsed last year. Still a scary team. Jalen Hurts has to be respected. Their secondary is going to be good. They spent a lot of draft capital on that and free agency as well. Their defensive line is always good. Scary opponent, especially in that environment.
Sure.
And then you come back home and play Kansas City, two-time defending champs, on Sunday Night Football. So it's back-to-back primetime games to get embarrassed potentially by the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, you better win week one.
You got to win week one because those next two games,
you never know.
You never know, but it's scary just thinking about that.
Yeah.
And then after that, you turn around and play the Saints in week four. At home. The good news is that the first four of the first five games are at home. So you play the Saints, and it's a quick turnaround. Thursday night football against Tampa Bay on Amazon.
I don't like that.
I don't either. But you get three of your four primetime games are in the first 5 weeks.
And then they're going to stop caring about us.
Well, I mean, they did within the schedule. But that is a gauntlet to me. Because even though you can look at New Orleans and be like, oh, whatever, they're New Orleans. They kicked your ass last year in the last game of the season. You know that's going to be competitive no matter what because that's just such a deep-seated, hatred-ridden rivalry.
Who's our quarterback in the last game last season?
Desmond Ridder.
Who's our quarterback now?
Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Things have changed a little bit.
Like, we should win that game.
They're still running Derek Carr out there?
They're still running Derek Carr out there. But, you know, you still have no idea, like, how, like, getting all these new rookies, free agent acquisitions. I haven't been keeping up with the Saints. I don't know what the hell they're doing. I know they drafted a Spencer Rattler guy, but I haven't really looked at their draft class.
That's fair.
Tampa Bay is a defending, not conference champs, but division champs. They were also a playoff team.
Not that that says much.
Not that that says much, but they won a playoff game. They almost beat the Lions last year in Detroit. So, like, they're no pushover. So those are five tough games coming out of the gun there. I don't know what the hell I'm trying to say, but you know, starting the season.
Give me the quick rundown through the rest of the season.
All right. So then after the Tampa Bay game, you play Carolina, at Carolina, Seattle at home, at Tampa Bay versus Dallas, at New Orleans, at Denver, at home against the Chargers, away against Minnesota, away against the Raiders on Monday Night Football, at home against the Giants, away against the Commanders, Dan Quinn's Commanders, at home against Carolina.
Okay, so it seems like a good opportunity to close strong.
Even the schedule softens up a little bit.
Like, even if you start off rough, I mean, hopefully you win one or two of those first five.
But I hope we can win, like, if we go 3-2 by week five, I'm feeling okay. And you know, splitting one of those games with New Orleans and Tampa Bay. If you can win both of them, great. But I'm just trying to think from a realistic standpoint.
Sure. What is it, May right now? So we still got June, July, a little over three months until football. But it's going to be here before we know it.
Like, it will be. I mean, the OTA started this week. I mean, Kirk Cousins is throwing balls out there. Michael Penix is throwing balls.
There's still a part of me that's excited about Michael Penix and hearing.
Yeah, I mean, we should be excited about Michael Penix, seeing him in, you know, the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And the podcast by Barstool Sports, Bustle with the Boys, was in Atlanta this week up at Flowery Branch. And they interviewed Raheem Morris for like 45 minutes. They interviewed Kirk Cousins for about the same length. And Bijan as well. Yeah. I didn't listen to the Bijan one, but I don't know. The more you hear like Raheem kind of talk through the draft and why it happened, like it
sounds like Arthur Blank was heavily involved.
Yeah, so, like, you know, the whole narrative of, like, Arthur Blank, like, Fontenot explaining the decision to Arthur Blank.
Was bullshit. No, yeah.
Arthur Blank knew what was coming.
Well, it sounds like Arthur Blank was the one that said, like, we need a succession plan based off that interview.
I thought Raheem was the, like, he's like, it's great to have an owner that understands the need to build for current and sure. the future and how rare it is to get an opportunity like this to get a
right
a future
either
either way. I mean, either but they're you know they're in the same culture. Like Raheem is like from Arthur Blank's culture, so like
is that a good thing?
I don't know. I like Raheem though.
I like Raheem too. Like it's interesting listening to like in those interviews. Like I like what you know sort of what the podcast format allows compared to radio. It's a long form interview. You know, these are 45 minute interviews where these guys can really open up. You know, Raheem isn't doing like coach speak to the press, where Kirk Cousins isn't doing QB speak to the press. It's like they're getting candid. They're talking about things that are, you know, not even talking about things, but the way they're talking about the subject matter is more interesting because there is time to really explain themselves. And that, you know, that's something that Kirk Cousins was talking about with the Michael Penix pick. He was, you know, saying like, I have to view it like I'm the steward in that interview with Bus from the Boys. He had to say, like, I have to view it like I'm the steward of this franchise. I can't control what happened, you know, with what they want to do with the future. Like, I have to just be in control of what's happening right now, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, listening to Desmond Ridder talk last year, it was like, so there was a period of time where when I was learning guitar where I really struggled with the A chord. And so I'd be playing a song and then have to switch to the A chord. And I'd be like, oh, I got to look at my fingers. I got to stop strumming and really like make sure I'm hitting it right. And now I'll play. And it didn't sound great. That's what Desmond Ridder was doing in all his press conferences last year. He was just like struggling to stay above water. Luckily, I learned how to play the A chord and I can play songs with it now. I don't know about Desmond Ridder. But you know what I'm saying? It's like just the comparison between like watching Desmond Ridder do press conferences or interviews.
Grizzled veteran.
And then with Cousins, it's like, Cousins is in total command of the narrative. He knows exactly what he needs to say. And it feels real, even if it's just quarterback talk. It's like, okay, you can just tell he's got a good head on his shoulders. Desmond Ridder was just thrown to the wolves. He didn't know what he was doing. He was just trying to survive.
On that point with Cousins just being a pro, like Raheem was, they asked him about like not telling Kirk until, you know, the draft happened. And he's like, well, you can't tell him like ahead of time. Because so many things happen. What if Penix isn't even on the board by the time we get there? And then, like, we just told Kirk, like, you know, a couple days earlier, we're going to draft a quarterback. Of course, you can't tell him until the pick's in. And he's like, I didn't expect Kirk to, like, be happy about it, but I expected him to be a man about it. And that's exactly what happened.
Like, yeah, that's fair. You know,
Kirk's like, this is just the reality of it. Like, he said he related it back to his Washington days where he was drafted with Robert Griffin III.
Yeah, even at Michigan State when Nick Foles came in at the same time.
You know, it's just kind of what he's lived through, and it's fine.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's still, like, pissed off about it, like, internally. I'm sure, like, there's a part of him that's using that as fuel to, like, go out there and throw for 40 touchdowns and hopefully 5,000 yards. Like, I would love to see that. But it is what it is. He's exactly right. He is – every quarterback is the steward of the franchise. There is no quarterback for life. Kind of thing, no matter how long you're the quarterback for a franchise. So, yeah, those were good interviews, though. And really, that's about it with the Falcons. We don't have to go through the whole, who's going to win, loss. We'll be here all night if we do that. But I do think, like, the back half of the schedule appears to be a little easier, but we don't know. Like, we have no idea what Jim Harbaugh's Los Angeles Chargers are going to be. You know, we have no idea what Antonio Pierce's Raiders are going to be. Like, they played really well down the stretch last year when he took over as the interim coach. We don't know what the Giants are going to be this year. We don't know what the Commanders are going to be this year with DQ and Jaden Daniels at quarterback. It's just like there's a lot of, as Arthur Smith would say, a lot of variables with just looking at the schedule and trying to be like, I don't know how it's going to go. We don't know, you know, the Denver game, how good Bo Nix is going to be. Like, there's a lot of question marks everywhere up and down the schedule, but you do know for a fact that Kansas City is going to be a bitch, and Philly's going to be a bitch, and Pittsburgh's going to be a bitch, especially with the Arthur Smith revenge
Russell
factor
Wilson
coming in.
Russell Wilson could be terrible, though.
Well, Russell Wilson...
He can throw for 78 yards.
Yeah, but the guy also still threw for 26 touchdowns last year. He's not as washed up as you think.
Yeah.
And he has good weapons. The secondary will be tested by Freiermuth and Pickens, the receiver.
We could go 0-16. We could go 16-0.
Who knows, I don't think either one of those things will happen, but like, it is an interesting schedule, and I really, this, I don't know, like, I talked about it last week, and I don't think I conveyed my point very well, but it is just one of those things where, I think I conveyed my point well, but I'll just reiterate it. Like, it's an exciting time to be a Falcons fan, regardless of what you think about the Michael Penix pick. I still think it's incredibly stupid, given what the roster needs and what you already did at quarterback with Cousins, but it's still exciting to have a Kirk Cousins. It's still exciting to think about the future of Michael Penix. It's exciting to think about this collective youth we have on the defensive line now, and just see what we can do. Like, what if one of those guys, what if Brandon Dorlus goes off and he's the next Justin Matabuki and he has 13 sacks this year at the defensive tackle position? Like, it could happen. I don't know.
You never know. We did have some actual news break today, Graham, that I think is going to lead to more roster moves. My boy, Ade Ogundeji.
Yes.
Cut. Clears up $3.5 million cap space for this year. So
yeah, I'm still hoping that the Falcons can go out and get a veteran cornerback. The cornerback room needs, just because they ignored it in the draft. There were so many good corners, and they just said, nah, never mind.
Stephon Gilmore still out there. Please get him.
Patrick Peterson's still out there. Hell, get both of them.
How old is Patrick Peterson?
I don't know.
He's got to be like 50.
He's not that old.
I bet he's 37.
33. He ain't, you know.
Get him.
Yeah, go get him. Get both him and Gilmore. Like, if you do that, then I'll feel a little better about the secondary.
Yeah, a couple of vets.
Yeah. That would help. I think that's it. I'm really glad we didn't do the win-loss thing. That would be...
Well, I don't think we do that until before the season, right?
That's true. But it can't be...
We got to see how the... I mean, the offseason's not done.
No, you know? It's not. So it'd be foolhardy. It's foolhardy to do it in general, but it'd be really foolhardy to do it right now.
Exactly.
That wraps up this episode of Atlanta Zone. I want to thank you guys for listening. We hope you're doing well out there. We'll see you next week. Until then, rise up, chop on, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitometer sip.
Hospitometer sip.